The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Oh, hey, welcome to a Monday. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and on YouTube and Facebook Live and Periscope, I believe, on a Monday, because we've started doing this Music Monday thing. And I'm enjoying it, and I've gotten some good feedback on the first two sessions, so we decided to keep it going. And actually, looking forward to making it bigger and better. So today, you'll notice, we're calling it the Monday Music Sunset Session. Now, I know 3:30 in the afternoon is not exactly sunset, but this show will be moving, the live show, to 5 p.m. Eastern sometime in the... We're shooting for a week from today, so fingers crossed. They got the piece of equipment. Now we need to test it, make sure it works and all that. But if all goes according to plan, we'll make the move a week from today and then be on live at 5 to make everybody's life a lot easier, but mostly mine. So that's happening. But I have now joined forces with my old friend, Michelle Clark, who produced a series of events for over 15 years that were called the Sunset Sessions. And what Michelle would do, and this was back in the day when I was doing music radio in Los Angeles, she would fly to an exotic location somewhere. She started in St. Thomas, went to Puerto Vallarta and Cancun, Mexico, to Maui, to drawing blanks now, but wonderful Bahamas, other places around you know, the world, really. And she'd bring in adventurous radio programmers. She'd bring in music supervisors, and those are the people who place the music in movies and television shows and commercials. So influencers, as it were, and she'd bring in a slew of artists. It started with just a handful, and there were like three or four performances each evening for three nights, you know, from 5 to 8 p.m. at sunset, and then we'd all go off and enjoy dinner. And the thing grew over the years to these big music events that were, you know, mini conventions. And so, you know, we've been talking about doing a Sunset Sessions radio show. We've got like 15 years of archives of amazing performances and things like that. So, and she's talking about bringing back the live events Sunset Session. So, and we've been talking about teaming up on it. So when I decided I was going to do Music Mondays, I said, hey, Michelle, we should, you know, team up on this together. So this is just the beginning of hopefully something that will turn into a beautiful musical adventure. But regardless, here on Mondays each week, I will bring you another artist. Most of them are going to be people that I've known from, you know, my past, but sometimes they'll be new to me as well. The one common thread is that they are, you know, creative, talented artists, and they're in it for the right reason. So today, we're going to hear from an old friend, somebody that, you know, I haven't spoken to until now in, I don't know, 20 years or so or more. Her name is Sarah Hickman, and she's from Austin, Texas, and she's just awesome. So I'll leave you with that, and she'll join us at the bottom of the hour. And it's funny because she's been doing a 2:30 song of the day every day during this lockdown on Facebook. And so today, her 2:30 performance, her song of the day, 2:30, will be live on this program. So hopefully we'll have some new people joining us. So in the meantime, though, we need to start out with the news. And oh, my goodness, what a weekend this was. I alternated from not being able to tear myself away from the television screen to not being able to watch it because it was so upsetting. And I got to say, last night, I was more shocked than anyone when I saw that the protests and the, there was protest and there was rioting and violence. And I don't think the two had a lot of common ground. I believe the protesters were the majority of the people who went out, not only in Fort Lauderdale or in Santa Monica or in Washington, D.C., or in Minneapolis, or in Denver, or in, you name it, San Francisco and Atlanta, and city after city after city that burned this weekend. I think most of the protests started out as peaceful protests in conjunction with Black Lives Matter, in a shared concern for what is happening in this country and has been going on for decades or longer. And enough is enough. The death of George Floyd was the last straw, and it set off a conflagration, literally, in every sense of the word. Just depressing, horrible to watch, and seeing how some of this violence started was so disconcerting. There was a, here in Fort Lauderdale, just so you know, the protest started downtown, and I didn't go because we're not leaving the house again. You know, my husband is older. He's 7 years older than I am, and he has asthma. I'm 60 years old, and I'm missing a lung because I'm a lung cancer survivor. And so we're being very diligent in our safety and not leaving the house. I mean, David goes out to go shopping, and we're very careful. So no, we did not go out to these protests. And I've been to many of them in downtown Fort Lauderdale over the years. And I usually bemoan the fact that South Florida is so apathetic, that people don't take to the streets. They don't go out and protest. Well, they showed up yesterday. And what happened was last night, it was, by all accounts, really peaceful in Fort Lauderdale. Somebody caught it on video. There was a point where a police officer, one of the Fort Lauderdale's not so finest, I have a thing with Fort Lauderdale cops, in case you don't know, I'll tell you that story one day. But this Fort Lauderdale police officer pushed a woman, a Black woman, who was kneeling. Yes, making a statement, kneeling. And he shoved her and pushed her over. And once he did, the other cops that were around him quickly pushed him away from the woman and down the street. Well, that changed the mood of the entire gathering, and it turned ugly to the point where there was tear gas fired at people. And you've seen it. We've saw it play out all weekend long in city after city across the nation. From the Associated Press, an account of what happened here. The officer's colleagues quickly pushed him away from the woman after he had pushed her over and down the street Sunday. Police and city officials said it happened as a peaceful demonstration attended by about 1,000 people was dispersing, and smaller groups broke some store windows and sprayed graffiti. The police chief said today that the police officer who pushed the woman, his name is Stephen Pohorence, in case you were wondering, Stephen, P-O-H-O-R-E-N-C-E, Stephen Pohorence, pushed the woman as he and other officers moved in to rescue one colleague who had become surrounded and another from a patrol car that people began jumping on. Now, in the video I saw, I didn't see any of that. All I saw was this cop pushing this woman over, and a lot of people in the crowd jumped up and were, you know, ready to go after him. And then they pushed him away, but that's when it turned ugly. And then last night it was like 11 o'clock or something, my phone rang. Really, it was a robocall. I'm like, who is calling me at 11 o'clock? And sure enough, David got one right after I did. It was a robocall from the county telling us that a curfew was in place. And I just got an email 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., although it's Broward County. It's Florida, so they said 9 p.m. to 6 p.m. because, you know, it's Florida after all. But I knew what they were saying. So we have a curfew. You can't be out on the sidewalk except within 250 feet of your house if you're walking your dog, just so you know. So you can do that. But 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., curfew. Now, somebody asked me in the chat room just a moment ago. Hold on. Let me find, because it's moving too fast. Somebody's asking about Antifa. Okay. So you got the idiot, the orange menace, you know, the resident of the White House, who is blaming this all on, quote, Antifa. Do I have that? Okay, so here, sorry, 16 seconds. I'm just warning you, for those who get triggered by the sound of its voice, 16 seconds. But here's Trump the other day blaming Antifa and the radical left.
We can have our military there very quickly. They've got to be tough. They've got to be strong. They've got to be respected. Because these people, it's Antifa. It's a lot of radical left bad people.
Oh, fuck you.
And they've got to be taught that you can't do this.
Okay, they've got to be taught, huh? So that's the moron in chief and blaming Antifa. Well, his attorney general, William Barr, did the same thing. It's the radical left. It's Antifa. You know what? Fuck you with this Antifa stuff. Antifa is not an organization. You remember Occupy Wall Street? That wasn't an organization either. It's a very loose group that pretty much anyone can join. Antifa stands for anti-fascist. I'm Nicole Sandler, and I'm Antifa because I'm anti-fascist. There is no organization. There's no leader. There's no membership dues. There are no meetings. It's not a thing like that. Yet, these gaslighters in the administration are trying to convince you that this is the doing of some well-organized, you know, terrorist group. No, those would be the white supremacists. Those would be the poor boys or whatever they're called, or the what's the name of the other group that I never even heard of before this all started. Now I can't find it. You know what? It's in this clip. Frank Figluzzi. Do you know who Frank Figluzzi is? He was the deputy FBI director for counterintelligence or something like that. I mean, he was high up there in the FBI in counterintelligence. And so he was on, I don't know, one of the shows last night. And so he was asked, he wanted to explain, who is Antifa? For those of you who don't understand, here's who Antifa is, from Frank Figluzzi, again, former deputy FBI director for counterintelligence.
The current FBI director, Christopher Wray, has been on the record saying that race-based hate groups now pose an equal threat to that posed by Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
Yep.
What has the president decided to do in a single tweet today?
What?
He's decided to single out one group, Antifa, that happens to be opposed to him,
right,
as a domestic terrorism organization.
Opposed
as you've already
to
heard,
him.
There's a couple of problems with this. One, Antifa is not an organized, centralized organization. There is no Antifa headquarters. There is no president or hierarchy of Antifa,
nope,
as you would see in ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any other foreign-based terrorist organization.
Uh-huh.
Number two, they are so loosely based and so diverse in their beliefs, from global anarchy to simple anti-Trump to supporting Black Lives Matter, that you cannot isolate a single body of political or ideological beliefs here. So I'm concerned that if we're not careful, this is one small step away from the president of the United States designating his political opponents as enemies of the state, as terrorists.
And that's what they do, because anybody who doesn't agree with Trump 100% is no good. To hear him talk, they're the evil ones. If you disagree with Trump, then you're not to be trusted. Well, fuck that. So, and as for who are the, you know, I believe there are agent provocateurs in all these groups? Because one thing that was fairly constant throughout the weekend is that we kept hearing throughout the day, all the protests were peaceful. There were peaceful marches. People were kneeling. They were making a statement, but it was peaceful above and beyond all else. And then as the day started turning into night and other groups showed up, people would show up, you know, ready to fight with bricks and with bats and with weapons of destruction. And Frank Figluzzi now says, you know what? These were not the protesters who were doing the looting. There are protesters and there are rioters and looters.
I have strong evidence from my law enforcement sources that to the contrary, right-wing groups and hate groups and white supremacists and violent militia groups and a group called the Boogaloo Boys are actually responsible for much of the violence in these protests.
Hello.
So we need to demand evidence when the president says, yeah, the folks I don't like, those folks who don't like me,
right,
I'm going to call them terrorists. And what would the purpose be here to do it? Enable federal law enforcement, imagine this, to have increased investigative techniques, undercover, online monitoring of discussions, activities, all of that, infiltration of groups. Why? Because the president and the attorney general decide, we don't like these people. These people could hurt us.
These people can hurt us. And so today, you know, Donald Trump hit out. He was rushed to the bunker, the underground bunker in the White House because there was an angry mob outside. Poor Donald was scared. He was a little scared baby.
I'm not a baby.
Yeah. And so he was rushed to the bunker. We can now call him Bunker Boy. And then he had no public, nothing on his public schedule yesterday or today. But what he did today was have a conference call with governors, during which he suggested that these governors are weak and fools. And he said they had to dominate. Quote, if you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. They're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks. You have to dominate. And then he suggested to the group that they should arrest people and put them into jail for 10 years. And these kind of uprisings won't happen again if you put them in jail for 10 years. He then said he would, quote, activate Attorney General Bill Barr very strongly and suggested the military might get involved to break up the protests. In fact, I played that clip for you. Well, no, sorry. It's a law. God, it's from the 1800s. It's going to come to me when I'm not thinking of it. But it's a law that says, oh, no, you can't. No sitting president can mobilize the military to use on domestic soil. Just it doesn't work that way. But then again, this is a guy who has no clue what he's doing. He doesn't have a clue. Oh, by the way, on this call, Trump also told governors that he wants to criminalize flag burning. Hey, Donald, two Supreme Court cases, Texas v. Johnson in 1989 and U.S. v. Eichmann in 1990, both found flag burning is protected under the First Amendment. So go say hello to your kid or something. Go do something constructive. Why don't you read the Bible that you know, pretend to have so much belief in? Or do something constructive. Why don't you do something about that thing on your head? I don't know. All right. So I like to start the show, as you know, and we're already 20 minutes into it, with something funny. And so today I found a new song parody to play for you. It's a new offering from the Parody Project. And this guy, Don Karen, who has always been quite prolific, but lately he's been slacking a little bit. Well, he's got a new one out today, and it's not exactly funny, but it kind of fits the mood that this nation is in right now. So with that in mind, take it away. It's called The Trump Death Clock by The Parody Project. Here we go.
There is a billboard in Times Square.
Hold on.
It's called the Drum Death Clock. And whether or not you think that's fair, the clock just goes tick-tock. The clock just goes tick-tock.
Tick-tock, tick-tock.
It lists the people who have died, but only certain ones. From slow response that was applied, sounding the death drums, sounding the death drums. The White House claimed Obama failed to leave a pandemic plan. The plan was there, just not unveiled. It was in the garbage can. It was in the garbage can. Obama's work routinely scorned, McConnell's way to attack. A virus danger, they were forewarned, but there was no going back. No, there was no going back. At first he said it's just 15, next week it will be none. Then with his miracle machine, it will just disappear in the sun. It will just disappear in the sun. He claims he acted quick and great with China checks in place, which happened 40 days too late. New York had its 200th case. When he finally chose to act, it was several months too late. So he played doctor to distract from the unprecedented death rate. From the unprecedented death rate. Suggesting ultraviolet light could work in trichloropus, while bleach and cleaning fluids could smite the virus through the caboose. The virus through the caboose. And there's hydroxychloroquine. He says he takes it now. An obese man with a heart problem, gotta question his know-how, gotta question his know-how. He tried to design a quick fix while silencing the scientists. No logic and no intellect, yet revered by his tribalist. He's revered by his tribalists. There is a clock placed in Times Square that's called the Trump Death Clock. Incompetence paid for with lives. Will you be next to talk? Will you be next to talk?
Parody Project. Trump death clock toll when they did this video at 59,124. The Parody Project is this guy, Don Caron, and he produces what are usually very funny parody videos. This one today, the lyrics were very clever, right? And, you know, we're always up for poking fun at Donald Trump and calling him out for what he is. But the mood of that, rather than being yuck it up, goofy, funny, sort of fit the mood after the weekend we just went through. So, you know, music has that power to do that. So here's my segue into our music segment. I believe that, you know, and I say this all the time, we all need an escape from the reality of life today in 2020 in the United States of America. Who would have ever thought it would get this dystopic, this crazy, this insane, that we'd be fighting a global pandemic like we hadn't seen in 100 years, and then we'd be hit with unrest and riots because the goddamn cops, white cops, killed another unarmed black man and people have finally said enough. 2020 has been the longest year in my memory, and it's just the 1st of June. So in my quest to disengage from the politics, from the craziness, from the ugliness, from the news, I have again embraced music in my life. And I'm thrilled that on this new segment, I can welcome some old friends and old friendly acquaintances and let music perform its healing powers for us. So now we bring you today's Monday Music Sunset Session with Sarah Hickman. We could all use some healing these days, so we turn to the power of music. Each Monday, we welcome another artist to share some songs and stories as the Nicole Sandler Show presents the Monday Music Sunset Sessions. And today, I'm thrilled to welcome Sarah Hickman to the show. Hey, Sarah.
Now, I can't believe how long it's been.
It has been so long. In fact, I know we certainly haven't spoken since I left Los Angeles, and I left LA in 2001, but it was even before that. It was like years before that that we hadn't spoken.
It was a century that we talked to each other.
It was in the last century, right. So Sarah Hickman, actually, you know what? Here's an interesting tidbit. The way we met, do you recall who introduced us?
No.
Okay. John Black.
Oh, yeah.
Right? John Black was the PR director for the Los Angeles Lakers. And when I used to produce the Mark and Brian show, we did a lot of stuff with the Lakers. We had Magic Johnson come to the Forum to play a basketball game with Brian for one of his birthday shows. So things like that. And John Black used to hold his favorite artists over me as sort of a ransom to get what I wanted. And so you were one of them. You, Sarah Hickman, and Lloyd Cole were John Black's two biggest artists. He's like, Nicole, you got to get on these artists. They're great. And so it was John Black who introduced me to Sarah Hickman.
And I just saw John Black about 6 months ago here in Austin. And I was so happy to see him. Yeah. And I remember I sang on the Mark and Brian show for that Christmas. Was Meatloaf on it? No, let's see.
It could have been.
Donny Osmond was on it.
Okay. Oh, you were there that year.
You guys set me up with the Tower of Power Horns, and I believe I had Jeff.
Oh, Picaro. Jeff Picaro.
I think I had two drummers. Didn't I have another one too? Not Steve Gadd, but somebody.
Jim Keltner. Like, Jeff Porcaro and Jim Keltner were our twin drummers. I mean, we put together some of the most incredible house bands. And this was at 6 o'clock in the morning doing a live radio show, our Christmas show. But we had Leland Sklar, like the bass player from the Heavens.
Mel Torme was on.
Mel Torme was there that year. Yeah. Right.
Lucia. Yeah. That was really, really, really fun.
Yeah. So
it was early. I brought everybody on the crew homemade cupcakes. Don took one, and then he came back and said, "That was so good. Can I have another one?" And I said, "Yeah, give me the paper from the last cupcake." So somewhere I have a little piece of crumpled up cupcake paper. And by the way, this is my puppy. So you're
Now it's a new puppy. What's his name?
Her name is Twig.
Twig. Okay. Hi, Twig. We're dog lovers here, so that's a good thing. So just a little bit. So Sarah Hickman has been making music for all these years, a long time, and she, you know, from Austin, Texas, where, this is the coolest thing ever, you were named Texas State Musician in 2010, so you're 10 years into your tenure, right after Willie Nelson and before Lyle Lovett, so you're in pretty damn good company.
Yes, I call it a Sarah sandwich.
I like it. So, Sarah, you're sitting there with a guitar in hand. Now, you've been doing, since we've been sheltering at home, you've been doing a 2:30 song of the day. It is now 2:30 in Austin, Texas, 3:30 here in South Florida where I am. So tell us about your song of the day. What have you been doing here?
Well, once the lockdown started and everybody had to stay home, I hadn't actually been performing for 3 years. But I just felt that it was selfish not to share my music during a time when a lot of people are hurting. So every day at 2:30, I do a song of the day. It's actually become two or three songs of the day. And then on Fridays, I do a live concert for an hour. And then I actually did a Sarathon, which was a 24-hour concert that raised money for the Central Texas Food Bank.
Now, you did this. You played live streaming on the internet for 24 hours. Yeah?
Yeah. My hands for the next 2 weeks after that were like four times this size. They were so swollen. But it was really an amazing experience. I've decided every 6 months I'm going to do a Sarathon.
So, oh, my goodness. And so people could just pledge money as it went along? Yeah,
I did it for free, but if people wanted to donate, the money went to Central Texas Food Bank. And so we fed a lot of families for a week. I think it was 22 families for a week. But the other thing is that my dog barks at me.
I hear her.
You want to say hi? Come
on. Aw, hi, cutie. Aw. Oh, she's adorable.
He's adorable.
Twig? Twig?
Yeah, so the hardest part was during the nighttime, because I started at 7 p.m. on a Friday night. And then as it got later, like around midnight to 7:30 or 8 in the morning, I did all quiet songs so I wouldn't bother my family. But the rest of it was pretty loud and raucous and pretty fun. So,
wow.
Yeah.
All right. So but like I said, it is 2:30 there, 2:31. What are you going to do for us?
Well, I have several upbeat songs, but because of what's happening around George Floyd,
yes.
I wanted to share this song. A brilliant musician and a friend of mine named Tom Prasado Rao wrote on May 28th. And this is a song he wrote for George Floyd called $20 Bill. So if it's all right, I would like to sing this song of his.
Please,
to start with.
Please. Okay. Sarah Hickman, everyone.
Some people die for honor. Some people die for love. Some people die while singing to the heavens above. Some people die believing in the cross and Calvary Hill. Some people die in the blink of an eye for a $20 bill. Some people go out in glory with the wind at their back. Some get to tell their story, write their own epitaph. Sometimes you see it coming, sometimes you don't know until you're out of breath with a knee at your neck over a $20 bill. Oh, brother, I never knew you, and now I never will. But I make this promise to you. I'll remember you still. Let this be our communion. It's time to break the bread. Do this in remembrance of me, just like the good book said. Sometimes wine is a sacrament. Sometimes blood is spilled. Sometimes the law is the devil's first straw over a future unfulfilled. Like the life they killed over a $20 bill.
Sarah Hickman. Wow. Was that beautiful? Was that song written for this occasion? Because it sounds so specific.
Yeah. Tom Prasada Rao, who's an amazing, amazing singer-songwriter, wrote it on May 28th up in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was singing it on Facebook, so I wrote it out. And that's actually my first time to sing it. So my kudos to Tom for being a brilliant songwriter and for allowing me to try to present something that is so moving. And I'm very grateful to him for writing it. So that we talk about George Floyd today.
Yes. Yes. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, people are rallying around his family, that, you know, the outrage is so widespread, because it has to be. I mean, we've been through this too many times before, and, you know,
for African Americans, it's been 400 years.
That's right.
You know, for the white community, it always seems new, but for the African American community, the Black community, it's nothing new, and it's always painful, and it goes on and on and on. And the thing that I find so amazing about the protests is that people are learning to differentiate between the Black Lives Matter movement and the white supremacists and the disruptors who are coming and causing all this damage, so as not to blame the Black community further, because it's a very separate thing. The Black community and those in support of the Black community are not doing violent things. It's the anarchists and the 4chan people.
Yep.
And all the white supremacists that are behind the violence. So please don't confuse those two issues.
And as I said before you came on, Sarah, you know, there's a concerted campaign among the administration to blame, quote, Antifa. Well, there's no organization called Antifa. It's a very loose, as you heard the clip I played from Frank Figluzzi, a very loose group, people who are against fascism. That's what Antifa is, anti-fascism. These are not, you know, anarchists. There are people with all different, honestly, political ideology within Antifa, people who are against fascism. And unfortunately, what we're seeing in this White House is fascism. And so they're trying to blame the far left. It's don't listen to that. Don't be swayed by the propaganda. Believe your own eyes. Watch what's going on. It's not the peaceful protesters doing this. These are agent provocateurs. So, mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for talking about it. It's so frustrating to have the news and different various outlets cleansed of real truth, you know. So I'm very grateful to you for speaking out the truth, because there is nothing more frustrating than knowing and seeing the truth and having it shoved in your face as a lie, which is what the person in power in the White House is doing. And I don't even think of him as a president, because it's been proven that Russia worked in the election. So it's a false election. He shouldn't even be in the White House.
No, he shouldn't.
So I don't even know how that's, I mean, if that had been Obama and the Russians had interfered, they would have taken him out in a heartbeat. So I'm not clear on how this, except that there's a giant web of power behind Trump. So I guess that's why, but yeah.
It's lot of disinformation that's been coming out. And this whole Obamagate thing, well, some documents were just released. I'm not going to get into it in the weeds now. We'll deal with it at some point this week. But the latest documents that were released show that Flynn was coordinating with the Russians. You know what he was talking to them about? Trying to sidestep the sanctions that Obama had put on them, saying, we'll work around that. We'll get rid of it. So he was plotting against the sitting American president on behalf of the incoming president-elect. As I tweeted out the other day when I read this, this must be the Obamagate they're talking about. It's just, there's so much gaslighting going on. It's so horrible. And November, everybody needs to vote November 3rd.
Overwhelming amount of people. Everybody needs to vote, because we want to have no misunderstanding of who the winner is. It has to be clear, and there has to be a huge gap between the loser and the winner, so that we can see the American people showed up and said, enough.
Absolutely.
No more.
Absolutely. So, Sarah Hickman, I want to talk more about you. Forget Trump. I've had enough of him. Mondays are supposed to be an escape from that. So I'm seeing all the stuff you've done, and I always knew that you were of service, that you did cool things. And I'm looking at some of the things that you've done in the years since we've spoken. And you wrote this. You said, I've gone to Uganda several times. I produced an album with the African Children's Choir. I've raised funds to deliver free wheelchairs and help build the Terrawood Hospital for Women, which provides women and girls with fistula simple operations to end their grief and pain, the only hospital for women in all of Uganda. How did Sarah Hickman get tied up, get into Uganda? What happened here?
Well, let's start with Uganda. I have a really dear friend named Lynn Dobson, who is vivacious and enthusiastic. So we're good bookends. We work well together. And she had been going to Africa for many years, working on all kinds of projects. And one day we were in church and she was talking about, I'm getting ready to go to Africa again. And I was like, oh man, I wish I could go. And she was like, well, why don't you? And I was like, because I'm a musician. And said, well, come with me. So she took me on our first trip, my first trip to Uganda with her. And it was so uplifting. I told her that if she was going to pay my way, I needed to do something in exchange for that. So I offered to produce an album for the 30th anniversary of the African Children's Choir. So I did. There's a mix up of some of my music in there too, because we didn't have a lot of time to record in Africa, but the children wrote their own songs and they're a cappella and they're beautiful. And we recorded in the girls' dormitory in Entebbe, Uganda. So there was cows and monkeys and all kinds of stuff walking around. Not the cow, but the monkey was up in the attic. So the kids would go, hold on, Auntie Sarah, hold on, Auntie Sarah. And they'd run out and we'd have to stop the recording. And so if you listen really carefully, sometimes you can hear a little tinkle or a little moo or, you know. But it was such an amazing experience. And then I went again with Lynn, and we worked on wells. We worked on the Terrawoode Women's Hospital, which helps women and girls who have fistula. And fistula was eradicated in the United States in the early 1900s because it's a simple procedure. When a woman's going into labor, the sensitive areas of her body can rip. And so then what happens is urine and feces can leak, and it's disturbing. There's some women, most women get thrown out of their village or their communes. And when I say commune, I mean communal living, not like people think of communes in America. And then they live in the bush. There's some women that have lived for 40 years in the bush, leaking and smelling horrible. And it's just a simple little, I think it's like a 20-minute operation. So I did a fundraiser a couple of years ago here in Austin at the Sweet Home Baptist Church, which is it was the first freed slaves church in Austin. So we did a performance there and raised $30,000, and that went towards the multi-million dollars we needed to raise towards building this hospital. So now women and girls are being found. This wonderful woman goes out and finds them and convinces them to come to this hospital where they get free services. And it's really an amazing gift to have been involved with that. And I love Uganda so much. The people are so fun and kind and smart, and they've lived under an autocratic dictator for over 30 years who is very like Trump.
Yeah.
In fact, first time I came back from Uganda, I said, gosh, I could see America becoming Uganda. And people were like, no way. And now we have this administration. Sorry to go back to him, but it's very similar to President Museveni over in Uganda, where the job rate there is, jobless rate is at 86%.
Oh my.
Unemployment is at 86%. Kids have to leave the primitive schooling they get to help their families with taking care of crops. Especially girls, they're taken to go walk those many miles to get water from wells. So that's why wells are so important in Africa, because girls need to continue their schooling too, so we can change the face of Africa to be a healthier one for all people there.
Right. Uganda, you know, the one story that keeps coming into my mind when I hear about Uganda, because we don't get a lot of information about Uganda here, is the whole kill the gays bill, that there's legislation there that's so anti-gay that it's just horrific. Is that getting any better?
It's very anti-gay. It's very anti-woman. I would say it's very anti-child. And that's not the people themselves.
Right.
That's the government and the council people. And then, of course, they're not all that way. Bobby Wine, who's a famous musician over there, has been voted into office. Now, he just was taken and brutalized in prison for speaking out on these very things. And fortunately, he's back out and he's still fighting on behalf of the Ugandan people.
Wow.
And there's many women. There's a poet in particular. I apologize. I can't think of her name right now. She's also been subjected to brutalization for speaking out. She even went before the government and tore her clothes off to say, you know, we're here. We need you to see us and to help us and provide us with the things we need as human beings. So there's a lot of powerful, outspoken social justice people over there. But because it's a brutal government, of course, they are oppressed. And
yes,
that's why important for people like me, musicians and dancers and theater people and poets, to keep speaking out even when we're scared or we feel like the Trump administration is taking our names, because we cannot become a nation that we don't want to be. We want to be the nation that we can be.
Yes, of course. Oh, it's wonderful that you do that. Sarah Hickman is her name. Can I get you to do another song?
Yes.
Can I make a request?
Yeah, what?
Okay, well, the first song that I fell in love with of yours, do you remember what it is? It's off of Shortstop, the album Shortstop.
I couldn't help myself.
Really?
Okay.
I love that song. I know it's, I did not warn her I was going to ask for it, so.
Okay, I will do my best to sing this song. This was my only big hit. I went to number 3. Woohoo! And back when VH1 was so much fun and we got to do videos, and I used to do a lot of live countdown shows on VH1. Which was
hilarious. They played music on these channels. Go
figure.
I know, right?
It was a good time. The late 80s, early 90s, middle 90s. Really fun.
I know.
So this is a song, and I wrote it after I had an erotic dream one night. Here it goes. And I'm with my friend Deborah Talla, who helped me finish it out, because I could just only get to the fun, sexy parts. So anyway, I don't know how sexy it is anymore, but here we go. Rolling up together, we seem to fly, changing our lives like ravens to blue skies. Too much time together, riding home from school, teasing me, you are better, but you are the one who broke the rules. I keep telling myself, you're just a friend of mine, but the more I deny it, the more I realize I couldn't help myself. No, 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 I couldn't help myself. Ooh, ooh, I couldn't help myself. I'm falling in love with you. you.
Ah, yes, that deserves a round of applause. Sarah Hickman, I couldn't help myself. A song found on the wonderful album Shortstop. And I still love that record. You know, there are some music that's just timeless. That's one of those.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I was just surprised you asked me that, so I pulled it out of my butt. Thank you.
Oh, it's great. It brought me back. So many memories. Love that. Love it. So Sarah Hickman, the next album after Shortstop was Necessary Angels, right? Mm-hmm. And that you recorded back in 1994. And your daughter, who is now 24, is re-recording it?
Yes. So the story behind that album, and I have albums that are more current, so we can talk about those too.
Yes.
In 1994, Elektra Records that I was on dropped me, and which wasn't uncommon for musicians and still today, but it's always very painful. And my mom had this idea that my fans and I could buy it back from the label. So after some negotiating, where I called up the lawyer in New York and said, hey, you know, are you looking at a framed photograph of your family on your desk right now? And he said, yes. And I said, well, my songs are my children. Oh. They're my family. I don't have any other family, and you're holding them hostage. So my fans and I raised the money and bought the album back. And then it ended up going back through distribution through Warner Elektra Atlantic anyway, which was cool. My daughter is re-recording. She had me redo my guitar parts, re-sing my vocals, and then she and her partner Mason are reproducing the whole album. So they've given it a modern twist, I suppose, with their music and their stylings. They have a band called Flora and Fauna, which is blowing up, and they're really great. So it's an honor to get to work with my daughter, and she gives me specific instructions. You know, I might be singing on the mic, and she's like, Mom, have you ever thought that you could da 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 da? And then I'm like, oh, ding, where were you? Well, you weren't around 24 years ago. It's so cool. So anyway, yeah, so it's the 25th anniversary, and they are doing a great job putting it together. So I'm very honored.
That's awesome. So you have two daughters, and they're both artistic and talented like you are, yes?
Yeah. Io, which is short for Iolana, which is Hawaiian for heavenly bird or one who soars. She is about to turn 20, and she is amazing. She started out in fashion, going to the school in Amsterdam, and she came home right before the coronavirus hit, so she's here with us now, but she's a phenomenal artist. You can see her art on Weebly and purchase it. And she's going into film. She wants to be a director now. So we're all very excited about that. And then Lily, my older daughter, is a musician and an artist. And you can see her. You can see both of their art. If you just go to my Facebook page or my website, I think I have links to their art.
You do. And of course, sarahhickman.com and Sarah Hickman on Facebook, which is where you do your 230 shows everywhere, every day. Yes.
Yeah. So they're great. I'm really proud of them. And of course, they're speaking up and doing a lot of protests on behalf of African Americans right now and the Black community as well. So I couldn't be prouder to be a mom to two better people. If they weren't my kids, I would want them to be my kids.
Oh, how nice. I'm also looking on your website, sarahhickman.com, on the music page. And yes, there are a number of albums after there's Shortstop, and there's Necessary Angels and Domestic Science and Misfit. And it goes up. And it's been a lot of years since we've spoken. Yeah. So there's been a lot of music.
I do want to say, so in 2010, when I was the state musician, in 2009, I knew it was coming. And so I asked, I think it's 39 different Texas musicians to cover my songs, including Willie Nelson, Edie Brickell, New Bohemians, Rhett Miller from Old 97, goes on and on. And they covered my songs, and all the money went to Creative Action, which is an after-school program on the arts and theater for kids in Central Texas. So it was really cool to do a song with Willie. It was really cool. Everybody else recorded the song separately, but Willie and I played guitars together, and he sang a song of mine. So that album is called Best of Times, and 100% of that money goes to Creative Action still. So.
Very, very cool. You know, you mentioned Willie Nelson, and you know his son Lucas is doing some amazing music as well. I got to meet him a few years ago at the last Michelle Clark Sunset Sessions that I went to. And in fact, when we were talking about these Monday music, she's like, Lucas Nelson, he's been doing it. So he hopefully will come on a future program.
You know, you and Michelle should put together Texas State Musicians program. So it would be Willie, Lyle, ooh, me, Mark Paul, all kinds of awesome people.
That would be awesome. You know how much I love Lyle Lovett, right? I mean, Lyle Lovett, I first met, again, when I was at KLOS. In fact, you can't see it, but behind me right here, I've got a few, you know, gold records. They're not records anymore, but I've got one for Joshua Judges Ruth, Lyle Lovett, that's autographed. Says, thanks, Nicole. Great to see you again. Love Lyle Lovett. he's one of my favorites. And he just did a thing last Saturday night, a live stream with John Hyatt. They did a thing. So this is the beautiful thing about one of the silver linings of the quarantine is that so many great musicians are sharing their music with all of us online.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a funny John Hyatt story. I think I can tell it here.
Okay.
We were playing together at Liberty Lunch, which isn't anymore, but it was here in Austin in a very beloved club, outdoor club venue. And so I was getting ready to go on, and I had on this really tight little black pencil skirt and this little jacket that was kind of open and some really wicked red slick stiletto heels. And all of a sudden I heard this voice very close to my ear behind me say something akin to, are you going to F me with those pumps later? John Hyatt, and they went, sir, F me. And I had to walk out on stage with that in my mind. And I was like, did he just say what I thought he said? Anyway.
Cool story. they're both phenomenal, and you know, luck. I had a wonderful music radio career in LA, and got to interview both of them numerous times. So, that sounds like fun to me. We can talk.
I know it makes you a little flustered, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. And I did a really wonderful film with Lyle Lovett called Angels Sing by a really talented Texas icon here named Turk Pipkin, and Turk wrote this great screenplay. So. Lyle is in it as a hilarious neighbor, and I am Kris Kristofferson's daughter-in-law, and Lily is in it too.
Wow.
It's a really sweet film, and Harry Connick Jr. is the lead and does an amazing job. So if you're looking for a sweet story, I would definitely check out Angels Sing. It's a lovely film.
Angels Sing. So is it on like Netflix or streaming services or something?
And the cool thing was Turk had all the music is by Texas musicians.
Nice.
So there's some scenes where we're together as a family and we're all making music together, which is really fun too. So, check it out. It's got a lot of great Texas.
I definitely will. I just wrote it down. Angels Sing. We'll look for that. So, Sarah Hickman, I'm looking at all these albums here. What's your most recent record? That's it. An eclectic array of Texas musicians. Oh, that's your coloring book. Tell me about you're very artistic. So I wanted to ask about the mandalas as well. So you have a coloring book. It's on your website so people can order this. So tell us about this, the coloring book.
Okay. So when I stepped back from making music for a while, it took me 2 years to draw this coloring book. I started in 2017. It came out last year. And all of it's hand-drawn. There's nothing computer-generated. It's all, you know, even the typography is done. It's got a little blurb by Lyle Lovett here and different people. But I wanted to celebrate Texas musicians, and I noticed at a bookstore one day that there was a coloring book for Bowie and Prince, but there wasn't. This was all like, what? So I thought, well, I guess I better get on it. So I released this, and it's all sold out right now. I don't have any left. I printed up 1,000 copies. That's volume one. And all the money went to several nonprofits, including the Sanford Community Center in Palacios, Texas, which was formerly the Palacios Colored School during segregation from 1928 to 1964. So the thousands and thousands of dollars that were raised because of the coloring book helped put in new windows and fix the floor of this 1928 building. So it's a free community service within a community in a little seaside town called Palacios, Texas.
Yeah, and I see to date you've raised $85,000 for that building. That's incredible. Sarah, that's just you're the volunteer executive director. there. So I guess for, if you raise $85,000, they should give you a great title. But, honorary yeah. queen. So and I'm looking at
my last album. You were asking me about my last
yes.
album. My last album was with an amazing producer named Jim Jacobson in Los Angeles, who has worked with a lot of great musicians, done a lot of television and film scores. And I really wanted to work with him. I had met him when I was hanging out in LA, and I had started writing with a musician named E. And I met a bunch of other really cool people that I didn't know at the time. And Jim was one of them. And so in 2011 or 2012, 2013, I don't remember. My last album came out called Shine, and he produced the entire thing, and he played all the instruments except for the ones I played. So he's really talented, great engineer. We worked at his home, very relaxing. I walked to his house every day from the place I was staying. So that was my last album.
Why did you take a break? If I can ask, if it's a personal thing.
Well, you know, I think a big part of it is I've been making music since I was 6. First time I got on stage, I was 7, and wow. I won first group at the Little Talent Show with a bald eagle. And I just always knew that's what I wanted to do. So I had my first band at 10. I went to the Performing Arts High School in Houston and music there and was in bands there. I went to college. I was in bands there, blah, blah, blah. Got a record deal, kept making music. You know, for all the tomfoolery within the music industry, where it's kind of superseded towards wealth, towards the people running the industry and not towards the musicians and artists, at least we were getting money from, you know, radio play and all kinds of things. Once streaming started, I literally saw my checks just fall. Like, everyone I know, you know, that gets their BMI, ASCAP checks, or you know, anything out there that's collecting for us, it was really disheartening because it was so immediate. And a big part of that for me was I still get played all over the world. And in fact, European and Asian countries pay, it seems like 4 or 5 times the rate that America wow. does when I get my checks from overseas. It's always like, woohoo! But, you know, still streaming kind of killed it. And I think I was just tired, Nicole. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done my whole life, and I toured and I recorded and I performed Carnegie Hall and did The Tonight Show and did everything yeah. that a person loves and wants to be able to achieve. And I think... My family was very supportive, having 2 daughters, and my husband was a stay-at-home dad and did all the laundry and cooking and uh-huh. helped with schoolwork. So I had a great support system, and my, if I may use the word fans, the people, the music supporters out there have been unbelievable. To this day, I feel so, I still call them necessary angels because that's what they are to me. They helped buy that album back, and they still show up no matter what I'm doing, any project, they support me financially to help other nonprofits. They watch my daily shows. They send me gifts. I can't believe it. I just feel really blessed. But I think I was just physically exhausted. So stepping away for a bit has been very healing. And now that the world is in major trauma, I feel a calling to come back. You know?
As I said, music heals. It has those powers over me. And if it does for me, I know it does for millions, millions of other people. One last question I want to ask you about are the mancalas. You take sidewalk chalk and you go all around Austin. And what are you doing?
Well, I've been making mandalas for
mandalas.
30 years.
That's, sorry.
I teach songwriting classes, but I also teach creativity classes because, as you know, a lot of people say, oh, I can't draw. I can only do stick figures. In fact, the first page of my coloring book, I drew a stick figure of myself on a couch. And I said, a lot of people tell me I can only draw stick figures. So I say, hooray for stick figures. Here I am in stick figure form, and I'd love you to add yourself next to me. So before I got into all the heavy duty drawing of Beyonce and people, I did that. So the mandalas are a form, a spiritual form of expression. And I choose someone and I show up on their driveway with chalk and pastels, and it takes me about 3 hours to draw between a 5-foot and 12-foot size circular mandala. And then it I take the energy of what I'm feeling about that friend or that person, and I put that into the mandala. So you can see those on my Facebook page too.
They're brilliant. They're just beautiful.
It's just to remind people that they matter. And it's relaxing for me to get out of the house and make art for 3 hours on the ground.
I love it. I love it. You're just so creative and so wonderful. Sarah Hickman is her name. Check out her Facebook page because she does a performance every afternoon at 2:30 Texas time, Austin time. And on Fridays, a full hour long concert. They're from her own home. SarahHickman.com is the website. You can find all this information and all that, and find out about all her music. So will you do one more song for us?
I would love to. And I'm going to do this song, Hopeful, that I did record with the African Children's Choir. I had them sing all the parts. It's really sweet. And this is a good song for right now because I want everybody to remain hopeful no matter how dark it seems. There is a light. There's a light at the end of this tunnel.
I wish you would look me in the eye and see. I wish you could feel the heartbeat beating the message inside me. I wish you would hold my
Sarah Hickman, Hopeful. And that's much needed right now. We need hope. So thank you for that. It's a good thing to have out there.
Sarah, oh, I asked me to sing along. I'm so sorry.
Oh, you don't want me to sing along. No, you don't want me to sing along. Believe me, you really don't want me to sing along. Sarah Hickman, it's so great to catch up with you and to reconnect after all these years. You're just adorable, and you have the best smile ever. And some things
thank
never
you
change.
So much.
Yeah. So good to see you. Thank you. Yeah, do you have any, well, all the plans are up in the air right now, right? We are just waiting to see how this pandemic plays out, to see what your future plans are.
Yes, I'm going to be working on the second volume of the Texas Musicians Coloring Book. I'm working on a top secret project right now that includes Texas musicians on a song that I'll be releasing pretty soon in response to everything that's going on. And I'm really excited about it, but that's all I can tell you.
Okay. You did tell me that it's a super secret project. And so at least we know to look out for it. You have to promise to let me know when it's out and we can talk about it and maybe come back on and share it with us.
And I hope to support my husband because he's in a band called the Sheridans, and they're having a hard time because they can't get together and rehearse as a band. So, you know, I'll be cheering them on as well, and my daughter and her band Flora and Fauna. So all the bands in around the world that are frustrated that they can't be one-on-one with each other, it's coming. You're gonna get to play together again soon, I promise.
It is coming. Sarah Hickman, thank you so much. What a great treat this has been for me. So nice to reconnect. Great to see you, and thank you for sharing your wonderful music and art with us.
Thank you, and keep speaking the truth. We need you. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you, Sarah. You take care. And we'll stay in touch, okay?
Okay, I promise.
Right. Okay, bye. And with that, wow, what a treat that was. You see, I selfishly like doing these Monday music things because it puts me in the right frame of mind to get through the rest of the week, you know? Okay. So big, big thanks to Sarah Hickman. Thanks to Claudia Stewart Navarro and Dan Navarro, who are both there on Facebook Live watching. Thanks to you for listening. And we'll do it again next week. We don't know who's going to be with us next Monday, but it'll be somebody great, I promise. And tomorrow, you know, back to business as usual. We got a lot to talk about. Gotta Laugh will be here. Amy Simon will be here, and we'll take it from there. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying involved. Thank you for caring and for caring about your fellow human beings. Take good care of yourself and your loved ones. And I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.